Hey, recruiting enthusiasts, I'm Priyanka, and welcome to Tech Recruiting Unfiltered Podcast, a podcast for gaining all the insider knowledge about the top recruiters in the tech industry. On this week's episode, we are thrilled to have Ritesh Jha with us, who is a talent acquisition head at FIS. Ritesh is an innovative, forward-thinking HR and talent acquisition leader with more than two decades of documented success in talent acquisition and HR spanning BFSI, tech, internet, retail, operations, analytics, executive hiring for global COEs. Currently, he leads the TA function for FIS for India region. Welcome to the podcast, Ritesh. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Priyanka. It's a pleasure being here.
Yeah, I'm pleased to have you here as well. So how are you doing today, Ritesh?
I'm doing pretty well. It's summer's coming on to monsoon in Pune, and it started to rain during evening. So
yeah,
weather is a great uplifter for your lifestyle and for your mood. So weather is just right in Pune. And two kids keep me busy. Demanding wife keeps me on my toes, so can't ask for better times.
Yeah, sounds great. And so to start off, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your role at FIS? And one thing I'm curious to know is like how your journey began in this industry.
Sure. So let me take you through the life story and I'll come to FIS towards the end. So I come from a hometown called Bhagalpur, which is in Bihar. At some point of time, it used to be the silk city for India. It still produces around 20% of silk for the entire country. So did my initial education there. I also did an interesting aspect of being a yoga consultant. So I did a full-time yoga course, which enabled me to become a freelance consultant. So that took me to multiple cities across the country. So I was there in Calcutta, I was there in Delhi. I traveled close to 20 states and worked with government agencies, with private agencies, with CEOs, and so on and so forth. So that I did for 4 or 5 years. This was like late 90s, early 2000s. But somewhere, coming from a middle class, you need to find a firm footing from your financial assurances and financial security in future. So that's when I decided to do my professional course, which was MBA. And I did that from Bangalore University, from a college called Christ College. And from there, I got placed in Infosys. So the first 6 years of my life was in Bangalore. So my MBA and 6 years was in Bangalore, where I was working on large-scale projects in gaining recruiting domain experience, if I can say, right? So improve your depth, improve your breadth, understand how the recruiting life cycles work, including life. How does the stakeholder engagement work like? How does an HR is placed in an organization? How does the work shift from an Indian MNC to a global MNC? How do you start reporting and working with global stakeholders? So that's what the first 6-7 years was. And the next 10 years, which was the decade of 2011 to 20, that's where I started to take up mid to senior roles in recruiting. So I worked with companies like General Electric, GE, and a couple of internet companies, and that's where I started FIS as well, right? So this was when I started to build large infrastructure function of recruiting spanning multiple countries, set up recruiting function from bottom to top. How do you set up a talent mix strategy? How do you set up a recruiting organization, build your team? How do you manage campus function? How do you manage executive hiring function? How do you manage high volume function? How do you manage a BPO? How do you manage a technology organization? So that's where, and do it at scale. So that's what the entire decade was, right? In the interim, just a quick trace back on my personal side. So I'm married. My wife works with Barclays, and I have two kids, Satyam and Shivam. So they are 13 and 10. Nice. Naughty to the core, but they are growing. They are growing kids, and we allow them to be like that, right? And that's the best deal which we can do for our kids, to allow them to manifest into the personalities which they want to.
True.
So happy in the personal space, happy in professional space. And coming back to the last part of the question in terms of FIS. So in FIS, I manage India, Philippines, and some part of US as well from a hiring perspective. It comprises close to around 40% to 45% of total recruiting for the company. And that will correspond to approximately 12,000 to 13,000 people in a year. Around 5,000 in non-tech and around 7,000, 7,500 in technology. I have a large team. I have a team which is based out of around 4 to 5 cities in India. I have someone in Philippines as well, and I have someone in US as well. So that's what I do. So I execute the recruiting COE deliverable, and I report to the global TA head here in FIS. So that's what I do, Priyanka.
Yeah, I think it's been an amazing journey you've had, and I'm really excited to learn more about your journey and your perspectives. So one thing which I wanted to know is, so what do you love about what you do that made you stay in this industry for more than 2 decades?
That's a great question, which is not often asked, right? So there is always a professional and a commercial aspect to the role. And there is always a bigger goal to the role which you are doing, which is the legacy, impact, your passion, your interest, what you want to do. So I've always, because of my yoga days, right? So I interacted with quite a lot of people at the learning and development, at an 4D HR head, and even at the CEO levels, right? And always saw the importance of talent and people in terms of influencing the life cycle of an organization, right? So you can have the best of the systems, you can have the best of the technologies, but if you have an average people, set of average people, they always give you an average outcomes. While the reverse is also true, you have an average system and average technology, but you have best in class people, they can create a multi-billion dollar entity, right? So talent was always something which I was always interested in, and HR hence came into picture. Why recruiting? Recruiting has obviously, on the functional side, it is like sales, right? So you have tangible outputs, you have a direct connect to the leadership, you have a direct impact view with respect to what you are doing for the organization, be it from the top line, from the bottom line, from the revenue generation, from the new product development, from the cost optimization, and so on and so forth. On the higher side, if you see, there is more bona fide of aspect to recruiting. There are multiple times, and it has come to me, especially when I used to visit campuses, is where the parents come in and they thank you for impacting their life. Right? There are people who come after 1 year and show us the picture where they have taken their parents to maybe into a flight for the first time. They have taken them to a 5-star for the first time, into a mall for the first time. They have got a house on rent, or if they even subsequently bought a house because they can afford it, and so on and so forth. So there is always a benevolent and a larger than life purpose to the recruiting function, right? Where you impact people, where you impact their lifestyles. You give opportunities to people where they can excel, which is good for themselves in their own personal space, and also is obviously great for the organization. So my tying in both the commercial and the functional part of it, and the larger than life aspect of it, right? That's what keeps me in this function, Priyanka. And if you see last 3 years in pandemic, people have again come back to the central conversation, right? Talent has again become the central conversation. And for it is my firm belief, and I am a humble soul in the entire fraternity, right? Maybe a small fly on the wall. Talent will always be relevant till the time we have big corporations and this ecosystems. Talent will always be in vogue. You can replicate transactional activities with a robot or with an AI-based tools from a logical, from a contextual, from an it's something which you called as building an algorithmic view to an organization. What is consumer insights? You will always need people. People can always observe the people the best, right? So talent is always required. Humans will always be required. So that's what it ties to me from my functional and my from professional aspect, why I am there in this function.
Yeah, I think you've greatly put it. And so to begin with, I want to understand a bit about how you assess tech talent at FIS. So what are usually the tech stacks you hire for?
So we hire at entry levels, we call it at 0 to 5 years. Then we hire at a mid-level, which is around 5 to 15 years or 6 to 15 years. And then there is senior talent, right? From an FIS as an organization, so we have three broad divisions. So we have a capital market as a division where we work with investment banks, with investment advisory organizations and help them in terms of solutioning. Then we have something called as banking solutions where we look at core banking, commercial banking, end-to-end banking services and solutions within their entity, inter-country, and so on and so forth. And then we have something called as merchant solutions, where we help the merchants in terms of scaling up from a technology solution perspective. So what we have is we have a very diverse set of businesses. So which means that our client base is also very, very diverse. Right? So there are medium enterprises, there are large corporations, and so on and so forth. So a good 30 to 40% of our stack will be something which we call as legacy, right? Yeah. Where organizations need those support. They do not have their internal wherewithal to have that capability on human side or investment on tech stack side. So that's what it. The rest 60% will be on all the new things, right? So you have a Java, you have a .NET, you have an information security, you have data product lines, you have, you talk about any new microservices and so on and so forth, right? So we have a 60% new age in more forward-looking technology stack and a 40% which is on the legacy side, C++, informatics, systematics, and so on and so forth, where we support our organizations, our partners from a continuity perspective. So that's the tech stack and that's the broad. So we also look at what I'm saying, and I'm preempting the next question in terms of how do we solve that problem, right? So we have looked at solving the TA agenda for these three, 0 to 5, 5 to 15, and 15 plus in a very different way. In 0 to 5, we have extensive usage of technology. So we do assessment tech, right? So we have one of the largest partners. In fact, we have a couple of partners in this space who helps us doing the pre-screening and the prior screening and prior assessment. And these are well-defined job roles. These are well-defined tech stacks. And they do online proctoring. And they take care of all the information security. And they do the assessments and give us the input. After that, what we have done, Priyanka, is that we only do one round of interview with the business and HR there so that we can save people's time. We can leverage technology. We are a technology organization. We should leverage technology in our and make it more digital focused. And so that's what we do for 0 to 5 years. From a 6 to 15 years, we do a mix of tech assessment and we also scenario buildings where we do a couple of case studies for people. And those case studies are around our technology opportunities or the problems which we are trying to look at, right? So visualize. Yeah. And that becomes much more division-centric and role-centric. The first 0 to 5 years is more like an resource management group, RMG-type model, where we're taking people with tech stack, and we start deploying people around different divisions. But from a 6 to 15 years, we start looking at a particular job. What is their requirement? We do a tech stack assessment. We do a solutioning around something around. We do a quasi hackathon or a quasi coding challenges for them. We also do a scenario building for them. And then we follow it up with 1 to 2 rounds of interview, which usually involves our global stakeholders as well. So their domain and function starts becoming more important for us. The first set was only domain, only technology or stack centric. Here the domain and function becomes important. When the third part, which is 15 plus years, that's where we have functional plus leadership view coming in. Whether you have worked in matrix environment, how can you manage global stakeholders? Have you managed large scale deployment of projects from a bootstrap model to a scaled up to a development and to a deployment model in an ongoing, right? Whether you have looked at technology problems of right scale, which is equivalent to what we have and so on and so forth. So that becomes a very, very contextual very, very dialogue-oriented, situation and scenario-oriented, where we get in people into our office, and they spend almost a half a day to a day, do more of interactions rather than assessments, right? And then we have a leadership view on where the people at a global level also start viewing them from a leadership assessment and lens, and then we have people. So that's how we have bifurcated, Priyanka, from tech stack and assessments.
Yeah, sounds really great. And so, Ritesh, I'd like to know how you approach candidate assessment beyond the technical skills. So what methods or techniques have you found effective to evaluate, say, a candidate's problem-solving abilities or critical thinking and creativity?
So our focus, for example, and for example, the assessment technology which we have in FIS, right? It's not very one technology centric and not very myopic in its outlook. So we have looked at a cognitive ability as the core focus, or the problem solving as the core focus, and the know-how of technology as a stack. So both of them run parallel. So what we do, Priyanka, and as I said, right, for example, in 0 to 5 years, we do not hire people for a particular role. We hire people for their tech competency or technology competency. So if someone is good in Java and who can code and who can write, who can solve a defined problem in A, B, C ways, that person is taken up and can be deployed in either capital markets or in banking institutions or in merchant solutions. So what we are trying to do is, Priyanka, somewhere we have started to look at this entire screening and selection process as a selection tool, not as a rejection tool. That's where the balance needs to be brought in. If people are bringing, say, 2 out of 3 aspects or competencies onto the table, and they can be used in a role where we do not need too much of a functional input. They need to maybe code and create. There can be subject matter experts who can take care of the functional side. These people can work on core domain, right? We will take people. So what we have done over a period of time, and I'll come to one of this, and I'll digress it for 30 seconds also, Ron, is that we have looked at A on an organic level to have a selection process rather than a rejection process. There are 100 reasons for rejecting people. But if someone has gone to, an engineering school, has done a decent CGPA, has some decent amount of logical ability, right? And we need to trust the ecosystem that they have got through. And there can be, they might not be industry ready in first 2 to 3 years or 4 years. They might not have landed up in a right role. They might have gone to a BPO job rather than a technology role because they wanted to support their family. But right now they have gone into a Simply Learn or into any of the platforms, taken those tests, taken those courses, understood the technology acumen, have come here to us and applied. We will look at them from a perspective of selection without any biasing that, hey, this person has not worked in, say, a banking GCC or on a product organization we don't want to hire. So we have looked at an organic level of technology competency, and that's what we do in our assessment test. So there is no right answers to the problems which are given. It's like open-ended questions, where people's logical ability, technical ability, and some amount of coding ability for sure is taken care of. And if they understand, they are familiar with, say, a Java stack, they can have a decent thinking approach. We will do that. We will take a punt in terms of hiring. That is also the reason why we have a central hiring pool for 0 to 5 years. And that the reason why I'm emphasizing on 0 to 5 years pool, this is where the crux of the problem is, right? Whether you get right set of people have been talking around, not enough quality coming out of our campuses. We need to upgrade them. They are demanding salaries, but we need to invest in training. I mean, we all need to invest in training, right? Yeah. So we look at the aspect that these people will come in for 3 months. We need to handhold them on the functional and training side, and they should be all okay. So we have designed all our assessments and our logical evaluation of them in a way that we select people rather than reject people. And trust me, we have hired around 11,000 people in last 2.5 years. We've been served well by this approach. The positives far outweigh the negatives. There are negatives. I'm not ruling out that there are not negatives. Mm-hmm. There are around 10 to 15% cases where quality of hire is becoming an issue. But 85%, it is serving the process. We have looked at that piece, and that's how we approach our problem. When we go to 5+ years of experience, Priyanka, so what we do is that we do functional assessments on a slightly more emphasized way, because those people will start becoming an SME, subject matter experts, and they need to expand their horizon, and their remit of role is slightly on the larger perspective. They might need to lead a couple of, say, campus joiners or maybe 0 to 2 years experience people. They need to do a part of the delivery. So because we are all on DevOps, so what happens is there is parallel iterations which are happening at multifold, right? So you are on cloud, there's parallel iterations happening across the service likes or product life cycle at which we are attempting to manage at that point of time. So you need subject matter experts who are not going back and regressing or taking away time from the global SMEs in terms of solving the issues. So there the scale goes up. There the functional enhancement is getting into the picture. There are some amount of assessments with respect to at least 2 to 3 years of relevant organization set and relevant experience starts coming in process. So we start becoming more emphasized, more specific, and slightly more grilling in our assessments in 6 to 15 years experience. Interestingly, 15+ years, again, you become a generalist.
Yeah.
Right? So that's what we have done. Look at a tech generalist in 0 to 5 years. Look at the experts in SMEs in 5 to 15 years. And again, a technologist and a tech evangelist in 15+ years experience.
Great. Yeah. I really like the approach as well. So, but how do you like strike a balance between seeking specialized skills and fostering a culture of continuous learning and adaptability as well?
So Priyanka, what we do is, so it's not a, TA is not the one-stop model for doing this, right? So we have a very well-defined training interventions also, right? For example, if people are coming from campus, they have almost 6 months of training intervention, which is there, right? Where they get trained on different aspects of the role, both functional and technical. So we upgrade them, right? For people who are with us, right, there is definitely some leverage in terms of and some motivation and carrot for them that if they keep on passing on the assessments in certain trainings, they become eligible for a hot skill bonus. What is that? So for our internal people also, we have created an infrastructure and incentivized the model where they can continuously upskill themselves. And we have partnered with multiple agencies, right? So we have an in-house technology center where the seniors come and take those workshops. We have an external partnerships in this space. We have university tie-ups again in that space, right? With the best of the universities and professors and researchers who are there, who keep on intervening and upskilling our people. So we have done that piece. Second piece we have also, and which I in fact missed in my last response was, is that how do we address the problem of specific technology ask? And this comes to us specifically when we are hiring for our legacy tech. It's a work in progress for us, but we are getting into a model of a finishing school where we are partnering with a couple of training organizations where people will be identified basis some amount of assessments. Then they will go through 2 to 3 months of rigorous training on the tech stack of legacy skills and also in terms of the job requirement, which we are. So we are building a curriculum and they will get trained on that. Then they will again come for an assessment with us. And if they qualify, they come to us. If they don't qualify, then the training schools have those lead-ups with this similar organizations and then they start putting them into different companies for interviews and so on and so forth. It is a win-win situation for us because we are trying to tap into developing a new organic supply of talent.
Yeah.
Right. Good talent already has a problem of plenty, right? Multiple organizations approaching them. The the silver bullet is in terms of developing the semi-developed talent, right? And at the same time, not compromising on the quality. We are not here for charity. Yeah. We do not want to compromise on the quality of hire, right? We do not want to compromise on the quality of project delivery to our global organizations as well. Then it will become a sequential suboptimal process. So we want to be optimized there, right? But what we are trying to do is, while we are looking at organic way of tapping into the talent base which is already there in the market, also develop this piece. Right? In that space also, Priyanka, what we're trying to do is, now we will set, and this has been approved this year, that we will take a set of people who will come as 6 months intern to us, and they are guaranteed a final job. So we'll come as 6 months intern to us. We will skill them on our roles. And when they start as an FTE, full-time employee, on day one, they are completely trained and upskilled. And from there, again, the same model at subsequent levels, we have those training interventions of keep on upskilling them and graduating. That becomes a priority for you for getting into the next level, into a larger job, and also from a hot skill bonus perspective. So that's what we are trying to solve, Priyanka, from an in-house and also from an external market perspective in terms of addressing the skill.
Yeah, I think those are some really well thought out and executed, you know, programs as well. I really like them. And so I think you are also involved in managing the TA strategy. So what are some key, you know, factors you always consider, you know, when making, in developing the and creating the whole TA strategy, as well as what are a few areas which you think are often overlooked by companies as well?
And also by the TA function themselves as well, right? So there are two parts to it, right? There is a hygiene, which is a must have, and there is good to have part of it. So hygiene must have around aspects around delivery on time, right? So you have the matrices of turnaround time, you have offer to joiner conversions, you have a diversity percentage, you have a quality of hire perspective, which is in terms of people coming in, staying you for a year and so, and also in terms of performing at the right level. So that's how we assess quality of hire. So those are all like hygiene models for us, right? That needs to be. So that is one part of it, which takes approximately, honestly speaking, around 75% of our entire bandwidth from a TA strategy perspective. The other 25% is tied to the larger goal of the organization, right? For example, cost optimization. So we have been running a cost optimization strategy for, and it is ongoing for us for last 8 months now, and it will be there for next 22 months. So it's almost like a 3 to 3.5 years cost optimization model. And we have got the world's best consulting organizations also supporting us in terms of designing and executing that piece. So cost optimization model. So for example, we have looked at how can we look at a hiring base which has right level of comp placements when they come into the organization. So you have a median, so we have a comp range, right? So which is defined around median. Above median is a higher comp range, and a below, at median and below median, median is called as the healthy comp range in which you need to hire. Because if someone comes in, he or she needs to be there for 2 to 3 cycles at least to get promoted to the next range or to the next level. So it is important that we start looking at our medians and ensure that people are coming at median or around the median, not below the median as well, but around the median for sure, right? Well, while you are looking at a 0 to 2 years, you can even look at a below median substantially. So that is one piece which we need, which we are looking at, right? The second piece which we looked at, which I in fact delved upon, was the organic talent development, right? So we have looked at partnering with finishing schools. We are now partnering with quite a lot of, at least 3 to 4 good engineering schools across the campus, across the country, where we are trying to build the curriculum for them in, say, in FinTech, because we exist in FinTech, so we are trying to do a FinTech curriculum for them, where it will become a mandatory curriculum for all the people for who are there in, say, computer science and information technology, and an elective principle for people who want to take, say, from a civil industrial production and mechanical and electronics as well. So we are trying to build a curriculum for them. We are trying to build a platform of 6 months internship model where people come and get trained in a training environment, in a learning environment, and become a valid FTE from day one, right? So that's the second piece which we have done in. The third piece, Priyanka, which we have done is in terms of looking at diversity and inclusion from a regional perspective.
Yeah.
What happens is we look at gender, PWD, and sometimes even economic disparities, right, as usual metrics for our diversity. We have looked at from a regional integration as well. So when we devised our campus model, we looked at campuses from all the regions, including East and Central India, which is often slightly neglected. North always has decent penetration. West has the highest penetration. And South also has a decently high penetration because you have Chennai, Hyderabad, and Bangalore there, right? You have Mumbai, Pune here in West, and Ahmedabad as well coming up as an IT center. And then in North, you have Delhi, NCR, Chandigarh, and Jaipur as well. So Calcutta is the only one, but the region where it culminates, right, the entire Northeast and the Eastern part and the Central part, is slightly under invested from a partnership perspective. So we have started to look at a diversity where we are looking at a decently high regional presence from even those locations. And we are trying to build in a more holistic view of diversity and inclusion there. Right? So that's the other aspect which we are looking at a TA strategy as well. The last piece which we are building in from a TA strategy, and we are right now partnering with one of our big businesses, is to upscale the function and benchmark it to the industry best and what it means. Right? So what we have looked at is, for example, we have looked at one of our largest divisions, which supports all our investment banks and investment advisory organizations. We have looked at how does our job description look like? A, is it gender inclusive? Right? So that's for us, because not many, at least 70% of job descriptions are not gender inclusive at all. Mm-hmm. Only write he. Yep. Right? It needs to be he strokes she, right? So it needs to be gender inclusive from its tone, from its explanations. That's one. We have also looked at, are we trying to talk around the division? Are we trying to look at the role and how will this progress in the career? How do we emphasize this? So we are looking at the usual descriptions of the roles are always there, but job descriptions always give you 30 to 40% peak view in terms of what the role is. And that's why you have interview process and explanation parts to it. We are trying to build that into a 75 to 80% informative base. So we are doing a job description exercise there. Right? We are including a video. We are trying to build a video JDs as well. So it becomes much more interactive and much more explanatory from a job description perspective. So that we are trying to do that for the project benchmarking. We are also looking at the talent benchmarking, say, for that division, what will be any other GIC like a JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, or a Citibank, or a Deutsche HSBC have from a hiring intake? How much do they take from product? How much do they take from competition? And how much do they take from service organizations? Can we have our entire source mix built around this, right? The third piece which we have looked at in the same piece is can we look at people who come with an engineering mindset? So can we hire engineering talent? Engineering talent is not tied to a certain platform and a technology, right? They are more like a stack or a platform, right? They are platform engineers rather than a division engineer. So can we hire more of those people? Because they can help us building a product COE capability or to a larger extent in India. So that was not asked from us, Priyanka. We built it and we brought that onto the table. And that's what I said. Sometimes TA also shrieks away from doing what they are supposed to do.
Yeah.
Right. So we have built that as well. The last piece which I wanted to bring in is that we need to also be a harbinger of in terms of how is the talent practice happening in the market. Right. So recruiters are the best placed people to tell you about the salary range, about the organization structure, about the type of talent in company, about what are the talent's expectations from a new role, what are their frustrations from their current role, because they do that for their living. But seriously speaking, that does not get translated into a good knowledge management tool. And that can be a very, very potent tool for the organization to benchmark themselves and also to create an organization for future. They can also look at certain optimization and some, I'll say, tweak in the process where we can start getting the right and the best quality of talent. It also gives us those hidden pockets and hidden companies where we have good talent. They might not be most well-celebrated and be present on LinkedIn, or their talent might not be too visible to us, right? So how to convert our interactions, our knowledge base, into a knowledge book, and how does that translate into a talent strategy is something which we have picked up. So that's what we're doing, Priyanka, from a TA strategy overall. Base hygiene, solid delivery, optimized models, leaner team, that's our focus. Governance and control, that's our focus. And the aspects around cost, organic talent supply, how bigger and larger diversity and inclusion piece, and also in terms of benchmarking our processes in quality of talent intake to the best in class in the industry. That's what we are trying to do from a TA strategy for this year.
Yeah, greatly said as well. And I know you've given us a very good breakdown of the TA strategy, which you're implementing. So it'll be really helpful for a lot of folks who are trying to do it. And so I think I wanted to touch a bit upon the DEI in tech hiring as well. So over the past few years, how have the perceptions of DEI changed within the tech industry? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. So a couple of things, right? So we started off, if you see the, it's a 10-year journey, right, from a DEI perspective. In India, it started with the diversity, which was gender, right? It started with the gender. Right? And thanks to the interventions from government, from social organizations, from institutions, and from companies in the larger fraternity, in order to solve that gender disparity, where you see, and it's an interesting data, where the talent representation, gender diversity talent representation in last 10 years has moved by around 40%, which means it was around 14-15% at a senior level. It has gone to around approximately 21-22%. If you look at a mid and junior level, that industry was at around 18-20%. It is now moving towards a 30-32%. So every third person is a gender diverse, at least from an industry perspective. And I have a limited view from a technology organization of certain large scales. There can be a small and medium enterprises which might not be listed, which might not be such large scales, which might be slightly lower than this number. But that's now where the industry is establishing itself. And that's thanks to, and we were all complaining, right? Why is this so much of focus on diversity? Specifically, recruiting people always had a plain book and a complaint book around it, saying that, this is making recruiting difficult and so on. But thanks to that management focus vision and senior leadership vision around it, HR specifically, to build that diversity, it's a healthy organization to have right representation, right? You have close to 48-49% of population as female. They need to have a larger representation and active engagement in our corporate lives and in professional lives as well. That is healthy for the economy as well, right? Leave aside any other aspects around it. So it is good from that economic view that we've moved in. The second piece around DEI, where it has moved in, is obviously the second phase started off with PWD, which is people with disabilities. And again, there has been large but very silent and great work done by the government, right, with respect to defining 22, 23 categories of disabilities and what are the levels, what are the getting the act together, simplifying the process, understanding, and also mandating organizations to adhere to certain levels and so on and so forth. You need to start off a new initiative with some amount of policy adherence, right? And then it becomes a voluntary and a self-virtuous cycle for people to make it better, right? So government has done a great job with respect to setting up that infrastructure, right?
Yeah.
Then again, then there were organizations, and I call it as social organizations, which tapped into the available talent base and started to train them and make them eligible for industry fit. Industry also, what they started to look at is to relook at their job opportunities and job groups, and started to fit in and make some modification and adjustments to engage them into our group, right? So yeah. That was the second piece which we saw around PWD, right? Then we had, it came in around LGBTQ, right? Where now and people of different orientations can be there, and there is entire list, right, in the LGBTQ, right? So that became the third one, right? In the interim, there are quite a lot of organizations which have done a profound work, specifically large IT organizations in India. And it became almost like a footstep and a roadmap and a blueprint for all the GICs. So organizations like Infosys. So when I was, Infosys was my first job. Their partnership with campuses in remote districts of Rajasthan, in remote districts of Chhattisgarh, MP, training them, upskilling them, making them industry ready, and not necessarily joining Infosys itself, wrote exemplary. Then what they did was, and then Wipro did the same, TCS did the same, Cognizant did the same, HCL did the same. So they've done a fantastic and a phenomenal job around it, right? In terms of taking the requirement of industry to the tier 2, tier 3, tier 4 cities and making them industry ready, and also moving their mindset to come to a tier 2 and to a large city and have a and dream big for a professional life, right? So if I can put it very simply.
Yeah.
So that's where the regional penetration also has started, right? And this was, again, a 15-year-old story. It has happened now. So now regional penetration has been there, right? And controversial topic, but religion inclusion has also been an oft, very soft, non-inclusive process for quite a lot of organizations, right? And over a period of time, at least in last 7-8 years, there has been definite view in terms of getting people from different castes and different religion and different representations of societies, right, to come into picture. So that's how the other piece, which is them. The next one, which will come in, Priyanka, is that, and there has been conversations which you would have heard about, is that should we have a reservation in private sector as well, right? And that is primarily to have socially oppressed and economically deprived section of the society also becoming part of the mainstream. That is the next phase which will happen in India, at least in the next 5 to 10 years, where we'll see more DEI-focused agenda. And that's where you see people, right? You see people in terms of doing a finishing school. Finishing schools are going to tier 3, tier 4 cities again, looking at maybe a 750th rank engineering college, where 95% of their people are not getting placed, getting them trained, becoming a modicum for them to be hired by the companies, right? And companies also have the limitations in terms of how much they can penetrate in terms of their campus strategies.
Yeah.
But what has happened also in that space also, companies have done is they have now gone into a group campus model. So it becomes agnostic to which campus do you come from. You pass the assessment test, go through the interview, you get qualified. So companies have started to make that more inclusive. We will see much more work happening in that space, where we will look at social or economic class inclusion. And that somewhere is also tagged to regional inclusion, which I was talking sometime back. That is the next level of inclusion which will happen in the DEI space.
True. Very true. And also, I wanted to talk to you about the whole candidate engagement strategy, like keeping the candidates engaged as well as interested in the position before an offer is made can be very difficult, as they may be considering other job opportunities as well. And I think candidate engagement post offer is crucial as well, and a lot of companies struggle with that. So how do you typically engage with potential candidates before extending a job offer as well as post offer as well? And any methods or examples you can share with us which you have found successful?
So I'll start by the senior leadership, because that's the most difficult part of it, right?
Okay.
So when we are looking at a senior leadership and when we are looking at a hiring experience, right? Hiring experience both has hiring manager and also candidate. Candidate is at the forefront for us. And their hiring experience starts from the time when we have tapped to them with respect to an opportunity with the FIS. And what we have done is, so we have earmarked, as you rightly put in, a process of engagement right from a approach of a candidate right up to the pre-offer stage. So where we have a timely interaction, so we have used technology as well, right? So there are system-enabled emails which go, there is voice-enabled calls which go, and so on and so forth for keeping people engaged. So what happens is we have ensured that people get some amount of communication and interaction from our perspective, from our side, at a certain duration of time. That's one. The second piece which we have looked at is, and that's where candidates most appreciate, is how do we collapse that timeline in terms of hiring? How can you reduce? And that was the mindset when we defined in terms of looking at assessment technology and one level of interview, specifically for 0 to 5 years. Because those are the set of people who come into the system of an open job roles. There are multiple opportunities. They might just go out. Yeah. So you might lose out on people if you don't have speed. So we looked at leaning out the process. We looked at using technology. We have used that, obviously, our recruiters, and saying that you need to interact around it. We have given a similar mandate to the hiring managers to be authentic and real time in terms of what this role needs to be and what this role is. While you eulogize and build on and give a value add in terms of how this job can be their next big breakthrough in the career, be very realistic and give them that real-time input. What happens, Priyanka, is that in this connected world, every candidate knows about you equally in terms of what you know about the company. So they have people, they have referral networks, they have a Glassdoor, they have a LinkedIn. They have a GitHub. The technology people can tap into maybe 16, 17 different avenues and know about you. So, but if you are authentic and if you're realistic in terms of what you're talking about, it helps you. It has helped us specifically at a senior leadership level and also at a junior leadership level, both, right? So people know that because your limitations and your hardships are actually the opportunity for those people. We tend to hide our limitation and hardships, saying that, we want to present ourselves as good as a Google or an Amazon. Not every company is a Google or an Amazon, right? Yeah. From a perspective of comparison, right? But what we're saying is be authentic, be truthful, say that this is what it is. Because if you oversell the role and get someone in, right, through the door, you'd have paid a decent sum of money. If he or she gets disillusioned over a period of time, and goes out, then your hiring cycle was not that 3 months. Your hiring cycle becomes almost 1 year.
Yeah.
The person came in, got disillusioned, went out, you again went into the hiring. So your opportunity and production value for that role has got stagnated for almost 1 year. So we have trained our hiring managers to be authentic, be real self in terms of telling what it is. Right? Even during we write in the engagement part of when the recruiters are looking at, there is a definitive conversation around compensation, because compensation is one of the strong levers why people have considered, whether we like it or not, right? Compensation is a strong lever through which people have looked at your roles. So be very categorical and important, saying that this is what we can offer. If you're okay, then only we will proceed. So what it did is, and similarly, then there is a limitation of pause of time. I will not get into too much of details. But what we have done is then we have an offer process. Then we have a revalidation of offer process. Then we have a post-offer engagement. We call this POFU, post-offer engagement, right? Where we do the, again, time-bound. The hiring manager will talk. One leadership level will talk. The recruiter will talk. And the HR will talk, right? And we have looked at the frequency, which is around almost week to 10 days, right? We have also given them an HR shared services or a help desk from a TA perspective. Anytime, 24/7, they can send in an email, or they can, so they can send in an email and any query, then people next day will talk to them, right? Yes. So what we have done is we have looked at a real-time communication for them, right? And ensure that when once people join in, they join in with the right view about the organization.
Yeah.
Being authentic, being truthful, has helped us. We did struggle with respect to our offer drops, but our offer drops last year, for example, in FIS, was in the range of 23-24%, which is still much, much better than what quite a lot of companies in comparison have, right?
Yeah.
And what helped us was very, very high touch point from an engagement and being truthful and consistent by all the stakeholders about the company. Tell them the truth, tell them the positives, tell them the hardships, tell them the reality, so that when they come in, they do not have a dissonance around it. And that's the reason why, although the attritions were high, so our attrition also spiked up from a 12-13% to close to a 21-22%. But our 0 to 12 months attrition remains sub 10%.
Yeah.
Because people know what they're getting into it, and their dissonance is on the lower side. So that's what we have looked at from a candidate engagement.
Yeah, I think you've rightly said it. And Ritesh, you believe in a culture of excellence, and it's built on your motto of trust, collaboration, and transparency. So can you tell us a bit about that and how you came up with that whole motto?
So it has been a story of, so usually, let me digress it and say that. What sticks with you, Priyanka, is a story, right?
Yeah.
You might read about facts and figures. Every day you read about facts and figures. And trust me, not more than 2% remains in your mind.
Yeah.
But if you have heard about stories, right, and about success models, which you would have heard around 5 years, 7 years back, that still remains with you, right? The stories, the success models, when they are being spoken by a group of people, that's what is organization culture, right? So I have been a great believer in terms of building a right culture, which has few edifices. The first edifice or the anchor is something around ethics and values, right? Hmm. You need to be truthful, you need to be transparent, and you need to be real time in terms of letting people.
Yeah.
Being real time or in terms of communication is also part of ethics, right? Post facto talking around limitations is not ethics. It's unethical, right? So you allow people to join in and say, oh, this is what it is. That's not ethical. So real time transparency is right. The second edifice of culture is that everybody is not a superman or a superwoman, right? Or a Wonder Woman, right? So everybody has their limitations, and everybody can have a certain remit of influence, and everybody has a remit of dependency. Hmm. Right? As a human, and at least at your level, the more you go, and this is my view, the more you move to a leadership levels, the more helpless you are, right? Because you are dependent upon multiple decision makers in the management. You are completely dependent upon the team which you are managing, right? Hmm. There are very few core transactions which I do individually, right? I'm completely dependent, and I'm as good as my team is, right? Yeah. So being engaging, being inclusive, and being also cognitively humble is something which needs to be another edifice, right? And I can always illustrate a story if you want in terms of how this has helped. The third part, and it's a tripod for me, is that you need to be flexible. The world is moving at a breakneck speed. Everything is getting disrupted. Technology changes the landscape in every 3 to 4 years now, right? Organizations do not survive beyond 18 to 24 months for 95% of the time. That's the failure rate, right? So nothing can be an absolute, nothing can be a straight jacket, nothing can be, I told you this 2 years back, and this is what it is. Everything is in the moment, everything becomes flexible, and you need to keep those two anchors as well, as I said, ethics, right, and ethics and being engaging, right? If you combine all the three together, what you get is a humane organization. What you get is a organization where people buy to that larger purpose, where people have their roles defined, where people have their journeys identified, where we celebrate differences, where we celebrate the fact that people be at a different life cycles and different material ambitions and even ambitions from the job, right? Yeah. There can be rock solid people who do not want a promotion for the next 5 years. It's not that we don't want them. As an organization, you can only absorb 30 to 40% of rock stars. You need those 50, 60, even 70% of rock solid people from a mindset perspective, from an ambition and also from delivery. You cannot absorb 100% of rock stars. Yeah. It will create anarchy, right? Or it will have retention issues. So being humble, right? Being real time and use illustrations and stories. So I read quite a lot. I read latest journals, latest stories. I hear quite a lot of podcasts and so on and so forth. We do those group sessions in the organization every second Friday where people come and talk around what they have learned, what they have heard, and so on and so forth.
Nice.
Yeah. We use those freewheeling conversations where we talk everything except work, where we help people if they're genuinely struggling. We have done crowdfunding and crowdsourcing for people who were really struggling to fund their mother's surgery, right? But people will open up and talk to you around this only when you give them an opportunity. That might also be the reason why they switch a job, right? So you might as well address it and manage that situation for them. There are so many cases where people have wellness issues. They are going through mental issue challenges and so on and so forth, specifically in the last 3 years. We give them that support, give them that space, right? And support them in terms of by being inclusive rather than being agnostic to it and saying that, hey, I am your manager. I just want to do the job, right? So being penetrate to people's heart, right? And capture some space there. There you make relationships not only for this world, but for lifetime. And trust me, you never know whose help do you need. We are all very, very incompetent and very, very helpless people in this entire ecosystem.
Yeah.
We should understand that and that should be applicable and exemplified in our day-to-day life living. So that's what we do, Priyanka, from a culture building and also from a day-to-day perspective, which has helped me in the past, which is helping me right now, and hopefully it helps me in the future.
Yeah, very true. And we know it's very essential to maintain good relations with all the internal and the external stakeholders as well. So how do you foster a very strong relationship between your talent acquisition team and the business stakeholders within your organization? And also, how do you ensure effective collaboration and alignment throughout the hiring process?
Sure. So look, the usual engagement works, right? Weekly, fortnightly, monthly reviews and so on and so forth. What I've always done is always have been helpful is that on a quarterly basis, I get the business stakeholders and I get my team. We call it something, we used to do it something in GE called the workout model.
Okay.
Where we put all the perspectives onto the work of the work. Right? So for example, in recruiting, we look at sourcing, we look at selection, we look at compensation, we look at engagement, we look at quality of hire. So all the aspects which is related to recruiting, right? And we put it into the matrix of, right? Stop doing, continue doing, start doing model, right?
Okay.
What it does is, and it is again outside that my next five hires have not happened. I have too many offer drops and so on and so forth, right? So those pieces, some amount of friction will keep on continuing. Some 10 to 15% of the roles will always be on the boil. That's a recruiting organization for you because the market, talent, everyone is so uncertain, right? So you need to get into that aspect that you are dealing with a very flux world. You can at the best control around 80, 85%. So 15% will always, 15 to 20%. Be very candid and human to your bosses saying that you can control around 80, 85%. There will be 15 to 20%. And you will seek their partnership and help in terms of managing. And I'm yet to come across so any person who does not want to help you from that perspective, right? Or who does not want to help you in terms of engaging and managing those situations. So being humble and ask for a proactive support for builds advocacy and endorsement for my team, right? Also being realistic in our day-to-day engagements, right? Takes away some amount of friction. Okay. So for example, we can do say around 15 offers in say next 2 weeks, right? Take 2.5 to 3 weeks as a timeline. Undercommit and over-deliver, right? Mm. That's what people don't do the other way, overcommit and under-deliver, right? So that's where it creates distrust and a friction with respect to partnerships. So undercommit and over-deliver, that's one. The third piece which I spoke around was the workout model, where we really do a half-day session, right? Where we take out any malafide intentions or any frictions around people who are not being working around, any angst which is there. And the leader and I will anchor that conversation. And we say that we will come out of this room, and it might take 6 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours, but we'll come out of this room with a workable solution. So once you allow people to speak, once you allow people to express that, so TA teams also then start realizing what is the pressure with the hiring manager is going through. Hmm. They also start realizing that recruiting is only part of their role. Hmm. And if they don't have those people, that's how they're struggling in their delivery, right? While recruiting is their overall delivery as a TA, or hiring manager, recruiting is part of the delivery.
Yeah.
There's a larger part to it. Build that human connect, build that empathy around it. Then people start giving you 110%, 115%, 120% around it, right? And business also, if they see your intent and effort there, they become reasonable. The one thing which I spoke on undercommit and overdeliver, they start doing with their respective stakeholders globally as well, right? So it gives some space. It creates an ecosystem where it can absorb around 15 to 20% of failure. We know that we will fail, but fail fast, fail small, get up and start building onto it. The last and the most important piece which is there in the workout is that we visit our last workout models and we don't reinvent the wheel every time. So what was our learning? Have we done enough progress around it or not? Should we start focusing? If we have not done enough progress, then we don't do a new workout model. We focus on that comes in pieces, right? So the last piece which is there is that we put everyone's skin in the game, right? Mm. While TAs, it's 100% KRA. We make recruiting as a function as a 20% KRA, at least for the hiring managers as well. So it becomes everyone's skin in the game. They want to collaborate. They want to partner. They want to make it achieve. At the end of the day, everyone's a successful outcome.
Yeah.
So net, we build a success. We build an ecosystem which will have 80, 85% success, 15 to 20% failure. And actively in an organic and structured way, start taking out the frictions, take out the lag of the process, take out those blind spots for the hiring team as well as for the business teams, which we do through the workout model and ensure that we have a healthy ecosystem. So that has worked well, Priyanka, till now. And touch wood, I think it will work well in the future as well.
Yeah, really, really interesting and very unique approach as well. I love the advice as well. And so I wanted to touch a bit upon the pandemic and the economic downturn as well. I think it has had a very significant impact on recruitment, and it has highlighted the importance of agility and resilience in recruitment as well as the need for the companies to prioritize the employee well-being and engagement. So how has the pandemic and the downturn impacted your organization's overall TA goals and priorities, and how have you adjusted your hiring plans accordingly?
Sure. So last 3 years, right, if I can take 2020 March to 2023 March, right, just 3 years of pandemic.
Yeah.
It saw three different cycles. We were coming off from a decently high hiring volume season, and then everything stopped during pandemic. And it almost stopped for 7 to 8 months, right? Then we saw an upswing which happened in 2021, January onwards. And then it went to a record high till around 2022, September, October. It has again put up a very, very big halt, right? And it has come down. So we have seen from an upswing to a downswing to an upswing to another downswing. And in another 6 months, we'll again see an upswing in India, right? For example. So that's for sure. So what it did, as you rightly put it, right? So the model of agile, right? The model of Scrum, which is there in technology, has come on to also into recruiting. Be it from a workforce management, be it from the talent, from a talent engagement, sourcing and talent engagement strategies. So we have become more real time around it, right? We've stopped creating, barring those 16, 18 months of very, very high hiring volume. We have stopped getting into a pipeline model now. What we have got, and when I say pipeline model, is that if you have four roles, you select around 7 to 8 people. And with a view that in next month, you will have those 7, 8 people. For the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th person also, you will have a role coming in. And so that's called the pipeline and overflow model, right? So we stopped doing that because the roles were coming few and far between, right? The second thing of Priyanka, what we did was we moved and got leveraged the data and analytics around it. So we looked at a hiring pattern of last 5 years.
Okay.
What type of hiring, what type of skills do we hire? What skill sets, what is the level of skill, experience range which we have hired from? What are the business divisions which we hire from? Through the year, what has been their business division cycles, right? Then we got a recruitment playbook saying that, hey, this is what it has been. You hire for 2 years, then you go down, then you again hire and so on. So we made a 5-year playbook for them. Right. And this is somewhere around Q4 of 2020 when the hiring still was very, very low. Right. The first phase of pandemic was still coming down. So we did that and we ran it with the business organization, with finance organization in terms of what is their outlook from a financial perspective and growth perspective for the organization, whether this is right or not. We got so we got the view that 2021, and I'll talk around FIs, we got the view that 2021 is going to be a very, very high year where we'll go to around 8,000 people hiring. The previous best we had done was 3,500. We were now going to 8,000, which was more than 2x. So we went into a more agile workforce model of contracts, right? We also got an RPO in place, right? So it can give you inorganic talent supply with the least of the overhead in terms of the headcount. And they can be more flexible. Contract workforce and RPO can be more flexible and agile to the work demand model or job demand model, right? So we did that on the workforce side. The second piece which we looked at was in terms of a hiring process, right? So we needed to go digital overnight, right? And that's where the more enterprise version and more scaled version of assessment technology came into picture. And we got in some amount of a bot screening model also in place where we could do some screening. We got some amount of bot in terms of candidate engagement also later on post offer as well in place. So that because we did not have much of people interaction happening. So we invested in technology and integrated into technology. Right? What we also did, Priyanka, is because of the work playbook which we had done, the business also did a work playbook in terms of their talent mix model. How much do they need from campus? How much do they keep from 0 to 5, 5 to 15, and so on and so forth, right? So that dealt together. Then we got a TA playbook in terms of for 2021 and 2022. So we, in fact, got an 18 months playbook where we went ahead and hired 11,000 people. So we had a playbook. We invested in technology. We looked at our workforce solutioning, right? We also looked at something which is called as RMG model, right? And that's where we got that 0 to 5 years model, where we said, okay, well, since we are all remote, we need to get into a model of a leaner hiring process, less of interviews, because there is a video fatigue. There is amount of system fatigue, which everyone was going through, right? Yeah. And how do we optimize it and remove the sub-optimization process around it. So we looked into the model. Okay, one assessment, one interview. Let's go ahead with it. 5 to 15 years, one assessment, one scenario building, two interviews, and we're done with it. So we started to almost, and I'm sorry to use this word model, but force fit certain models around it so that organization was also becoming leaner around it. And we're trying to get in as agile to the hiring process as possible from that perspective. Right? The last one, Priyanka, what we did was we also started to invest heavy in campus. Our campus intakes were around 200-250. We hired close to 1,050 people in 2021 because we said, hey, this is the year where not many companies are going into campus. Let's invest in campus. Let's build a training model. We get them at the lowest cost in the pyramid. If we engage them, train them, and we bring them up to the speed, it will get us a great cost leverage. So that's what we did. So we looked at a digitalization of the process. We invested in technology. We leaned out the process. We looked at the candidate management from a technology plus person model. And that's how we manage the situation.
Right. And also, I wanted to talk to you a bit about the employee experience and how it has changed post-pandemic as well. So it's now more important than ever. And a lot of companies are struggling with it and its prioritization as well, especially post-pandemic, keeping the employees connected and engaged in the new remote setting has been very challenging. But so while employers are reporting increased productivity working from home, I think the productivity gains are coming with the cost of their mental health. So, and this is why recruiters and companies will have to reinvent the whole employee experience and adjust it to the, you know, new realm. So could you share with us some ways you have found effective in redefining the whole employee experience from your experience in the industry so far?
Sure. So a couple of things, right? And I'll take last 2 years because that's much more relevant, right? Mm-hmm. Because ecosystem and paradigm has shifted quite a lot in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So what we did, and we still did, we are quite proud of it, is that we are one of the few companies which have a large-scale hybrid work model. We still have approximately close to 60% of people working remote. We have not mandated very, very strongly. And we have presence in seven to eight parts of the country, right? Yeah. Right from north, from west, central, south, and some part in, actually not, we have closed on the east center. So what we have done is we have given flexibility to of people to remain where they are and not being displaced, right? Yeah. Even when the mandate of coming back to the person. So we have given that flexibility. That was a major flexibility. And that's something which people have done. We have also looked at our internal talent base, right? We are internal. And what happens, Priyanka, is that we make all those ecosystems and models for our external talent. We usually ignore our people. Yeah. So we have made our IJP process location agnostic. What it means is that someone is in Mohali, where we have a center, and there is a role which is based out of Bangalore or Chennai, and that is for a next level. The person can apply for it, get that role, and still be based out of Mohali. Right? So we ensured that we do not make it mandatory for people to move across. So we make it location agnostic. That was an inclusion part as well, right? The second aspect which we looked into was, as I said, right, we have looked at people being from their locations. We have ensured that we have given mandates to our managers, right, that there has to be a certain remit, and there is HR-driven and a central-driven concepts of what is the usual number of hours people are working. Are they working in the weekends and not? If they're working in the weekends, what is their adherence towards a comp off and so on and so forth. So we are ensuring that while we have a defined 45 hours week, right, 45 to 50 hours week, we should ensure that it remains in principle and in value in practice as well, right? 50 can become a 55, but let's not take it to 60. Let's not start taking it to 65, 70. Let's not take into the model where, you are available at home, I can call you in. So we have, and there has been quite a lot of global initiatives around it, right? If people are in India, then these are their working hours. If people are in US, these are their working hours, right? And you should, they encourage people to only talk around working hours. The other piece which we have done is we have got a full stack of EAP employee assistant programs where people can talk to if they have any issues around mental wellness, if they have certain, they want to have a certain counseling, there is very, very personalized, completely confidential conversation tool model. And we have those reinforcements of EAPs after every 15 days, where in the huddles and in the town halls, in the meet, in the communication where people are encouraged to use it. The other piece which we have done it is that we do take wellness offs, right? So for example, last Friday, 2nd of June, globally FIS took time off. So we have decided 2 days in a year where everyone will be off, right? Client facing, nothing. You can't send an email, you can't send it. So what we are trying today is we are also positively re-emphasizing it to our businesses, saying that you should do that on every second week. Make it a hot Friday, home on time, which means you log in early, you do exactly 7.5-8 hours, and then log off, right? Ensure that people get tracked in terms of how many hours are they working. Ensure that people have all the models. HR partners connect with them. We have done a much more engaged way of wellness programs. Every Friday, we have a wellness program happening on mental, on physical, Zumba classes, yoga classes. You have instrument learning classes and so on and so forth. You can go to office if you're around, or you can do it online. You can take subscriptions and so on and so forth, right? So we have started to give people as much space as possible. Treat them as human first, right? And not as commodities, right? And ensure that their working hours is right. Ensure that their productivity on a personal and professional part is right. We have also encouraged our managers to reach out to the family and talk to them in terms of to the employee's family, right? And talk to them if they need any support or so on and so forth. There are regional meetups which are happening, right? Irrespective of whichever business divisions you are. For example, in Mohali or in Gurgaon or in Pune, there can be a fun Friday where people can walk in irrespective. And there's a half day fun filled activity. People are doing trips together. People are going for a cycling event together. People are going quarter of people have planned holidays together. And these are people from different businesses, right? These are not your usual colleagues and so on and so forth. So that's what we're doing. That's what we have done for overall wellness and keep it flexible for people.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing initiatives, FIS has taken. Really great job. And so also, millennials are already the largest workforce now. And Gen Z is also catching up and joining their slightly older peers. So it is inevitable that the youth will soon become the principal generation in the world of work. And so recruiters will have to tailor their recruiting campaigns and strategies according for both the generations as well. So what are your thoughts on this? And according to you, like, what kind of tweaks should be made to the campaigns and strategies to keep up and be the best?
So one of the great learnings which has come out of this pandemic is that, and that's my personal view, irrespective of whichever generation which you come from, you want to be part of a certain social circle.
Yeah.
Right. And while humans are social, right? At the same breath, I will also say that they are also very privacy conscious. Right. So you need to first have a right balance around it, right? So while we have been emphasizing in terms of preparing our workforces with respect to millennials, Gen Zs, right? There is also a decent set of non-preparedness for managing people in the middle age group as well. If you see, all the organizations are becoming sub 40 from a model inclusion and so on. How do you take care of people who are 40 plus, 45 plus? And so we have looked at a more holistic view, and we need to look at a more holistic view, right? While Gen Zs and millennials will become a 60, 65% or even 70% of the workforce, there still will be 30% people who will be 35 plus for you or a 40 plus for you, right?
Yeah.
So we need to have a right level of engagement in social circles. The other piece, which is my firm belief, Priyanka, is that this new generation has and I'm not sounding to be old, but this new generation wants what? 3-4 things, right? A, they need autonomy, right? B, they need respect for their personal space. job is a means to an end and not an end for themselves. Previous, so generation workforce, which went into 80s, into 90s, into workforce, or maybe early 2000, work was, their life was built around work.
Yeah.
The new, what is the new generation telling us? The new generation is saying that the work needs to be based around our life. Right, so it's something which the organizations need to look at. And that's why we have a hybrid model, we have an assistance program, you have social circle clubs, and so on and so forth. So autonomy, space, which I said in terms of privacy and space, respect for them, right? And the third piece which most of the organizations will need to look into is that how do you make it incrementally progressive for people, right? So there, in India, there is a certain sense of unrest, right? If you do not get promoted to a manager level in 7 to 8 years experience, in 7 to 8 years, right? Well, my PR has become a manager, I'm still an SME, right? I have not become a VP at a certain age. I've not become a director at a certain age. So there is a amount of social. But what is happening also in the same space is that the organizations specifically in tech are now pivoting towards a skill-based organization. So they are now more role-based and skill-based. There are more senior people becoming SMEs, right? Subject matter experts. So we need to pivot our organizations from an hierarchical driven where we're promoting people to satisfy their needs and social acceptance to a more meaningful role, right? So while that hierarchy will remain, I'm not saying that that will go away. How am I progressing in skills? How am I progressing in my career? How is this role being relevant for me in the next 5 years, 7 years, and 10 years time? And Priyanka, what happens is we need to bring in more industry flavor to it. The managers will be more vested, leadership will be more vested. Allow more people from external partners or external, or maybe from a competition or from a different companies to come and talk around it. If in my company, in FIS, someone from an Adobe comes and says that, hey, it's okay to be a specialist at a 10 years, 12 years time, right? I have been working on this technology for last 10 years, 12 years. I'm still not irrelevant, right? At the same time, this is how I am growing my career. So as I said, the stories, sometime back I was talking about, stories and success models are much more powerful than preachy models.
Yeah.
Leadership can be more preachy. The managers can be more preachy. Bring more people from the community, bring more people from the similar mindsets, come and talk to them and ensure that they are socially relevant, they are rightly placed. That's how you can retain people. At the same time, Priyanka, I will do pass on that not everyone gets hired to retire, right? There is certain shelf life for people. There is some amount of healthy attrition, which is also required. There is some amount of new infusion of blood, which is also required. So build an organization which is flexible, build an organization which can have retention of people, at the same time can have some exodus of people as well, right? But build in more community model to other organization. Don't be only frog in the well approach, build in a larger community, make them part of the larger ecosystem. You will lose few people, but you'll also gain some people. You will also retain quite a lot of people. So open and transparency around it will help in future.
Yeah, rightly said. And so in today's rapidly evolving digital landscape, I think businesses are constantly seeking innovative solutions to gain a competitive edge. And the TA is one such area that has seen significant transformation. And recruitment and the whole hiring have evolved from the traditional methods to more sophisticated ones as well due to the advent of generative AI. So the generative AI is reshaping the whole talent acquisition function, and it's revolutionizing the way we identify, attract, and retain the top talent. So what are your thoughts on this?
Absolutely. So as I said, we are all moving towards a skill-based economy and skill-based organization. So even people at the top level need to be decently updated on their skills to be relevant, right? Otherwise, for transactional work, generative AI will replace quite a lot of work, right? For example, writing a job description for an architect can be done. You put that in ChatGPT, it will give you 4 to 5 versions of it.
Yeah.
But contextualize it to your organization, contextualize it to your life cycle, contextualize it to your organization's need, why, and to the team build which you have. Where will this person fit into? You still need humans. So people, and specifically from TA, they will need to start understanding business well. They need to start understanding market well. They need to be much more informed about what is happening in the competition, what is happening around talent, sorry, tech, what are the in vogue in tech, how are the roles evolving. So you almost need to move towards an Oracle model, right, where you need to be an Oracle for what is going to happen. You also need to help companies benchmark in terms of how your role, how your structure is incompatible to other companies' structure. That's where you will hire the right set of people at the right cost. So, and for that, you will still need people, right? But will you need fewer people? The answer is yes. You will need fewer people. The auto-scheduling, auto-transactional emails, right? Those connects and so on and so forth will all start getting system-based. But you will need people. But what it will do is it will also open up new industries. It will open up new scale and avenues. It can be more real time. You can move more middle office and front office roles from US to India. And that's where I see a silver lining for this entire. What it will mean over a period of time is generative AI will help us understanding the market well, understanding the landscape well, enhance the ability to do that job which is being done in Silicon Valley based out of a Bangalore or a Pune as well. Yeah. So it will make location much more irrelevant, which technology and cloud and internet has been. So it will be next stage. So what it will do is it will repack more roles to India, right? It will, but what will people need to do is they start need to become more foundational and more domain oriented, understand what recruiting is, understand what talent is, understand what comp is, understand what technology is, understand what business is. So you need to become more techno-functional and more smart, more skillful and much more involved and engaged with the business, and then only you will survive. That's how I see this entire generative AI impacting TA function.
Yeah, sounds great. And so the recruitment industry is constantly evolving, and the whole technological advancements and the changing job market demands as well are shaping the future of recruitment. So according to you, like, what emerging trends and technologies do you anticipate will have the biggest impact on the way we hire and, you know, retain talent? And how can recruiters be prepared for these changes?
Sure. So there is quite a lot of work which is being done, and a significant amount of work which will keep on happening is on the sourcing side, because that's the biggest human intensive part of the role, right? And we still have seen a very suboptimal outlook with respect to bot screening, with respect to AI, ML-driven screening, and so on and so forth, right? So that part, while the train has left the station on that part for a new bootstrap company to come in, but the evolution of that technology is still needs to do that. The type of capability which generative AI is talking around, the same capability needs to not transfer into a sourcing and screening model, at least from that perspective. That's one part which you'll see the maximum amount of impact from a recruiting technology, right? The second amount of recruiting technology will come in is in terms of, again, the other intensive process, scheduling, interview schedules on Outlook calendar, getting feedbacks, reminder about the feedbacks, the next schedule to be put in. So there will be CRM tools which will, once a person has been shortlisted for an interview, which, and this will be, again, a bot enabled or maybe IVR enabled, where people get calls and so on and so forth, where people will keep on getting reminded with respect to their next schedules. There will be schedule automizers, which will happen, which will come in, where you don't need to put it on the Outlook calendar of people. Yeah. The system will go and look at the relevant time slot, or managers will say that these are my defined time slot. They'll go and auto-schedule people there. So scheduling optimization, so that's where the another human piece will come in. What it will do is it will start homogenizing the interaction piece where humans and machines will start working with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Assessment tech already is a pretty evolved model where we are seeing quite a lot of evolution which has happened. And it is almost around 80-85% optimized from an assessment. Specifically in a 0 to 5 years, 7 years. There has to be some work which needs to be done on the techno-functional side of assessments, right? Where people are not doing only linear jobs, but people are doing different algorithmic, more heuristic part of it, techno-functional, slightly more ambiguous part of the role needs to be done along with the technical aspects of the role. How do we bring in an assessment stack? Right now we have an assessment stack which does technology. Then the other one is doing the other part of the cognitive and the behavioral part of it. How we start blending it together in a slightly more integrative way. Right? There are systems which are claiming to be it, but it needs to evolve. Right? So that is something which is there. And it needs to also look into the model that people who are mid to senior levels, they do not want to take assessments because it is against their ego. Right, they're not very good. So how do you make it much more engaging and relevant? If it comes with a value add saying that, hey, this assessment which you're investing for next 45 minutes to an hour actually can collapse your interview timelines from a 3 weeks to a 1 week, then people, so a good 70% of the people might start adopting to it. And then you can always build on it, right, for a better model.
Mm-hmm.
So that piece needs to have a certain view, right, around it. Then I think this is the broad piece, right? Screening, engagement, assessments. This will keep on seeing quite a lot of impact on technologies where base human transactional activities can be replaced by more generative AI-driven tools in machine learning capable systems. And humans are then allowed to focus on the more evolved way of working in terms of looking at the organization structure, contextualizing the job roles, getting into the selection part of it around compensation, engagement, and then obviously in terms of joining part of it, right? So that each will play its own part. Nobody's going to take anybody's role. It will help you scaling up faster. It will help us in adapting to the experience better. It will also start collapsing the timelines for hiring. It will also make the entire hiring process more consistent and take away the biasness from our human engagements and human assessments, right? So that's what technology will do for us. And both of us will collaborate well on this.
Yeah, true. Very true. And you've shared some really great insights. And so, before we wrap up our conversation, I wanted to ask you, Ritesh, so your experience in this industry goes back to over 2 decades. So what would be your piece of advice for the budding recruiters out there?
So again, I'm still a small fly on the wall, right, in the entire ecosystem. But if I may, since you've asked for it, 2-3 things, right? A, start learning about the industry, start learning about the technology, start learning about the organization or the business need in terms of hiring, right? So understand why is that hiring happening, right? Don't get into a model that I have received this role and okay, I need to go on to a Naukri and start searching for it and so on. So forth. Start getting some science around it. Start understanding and being adept at using technology from a recruiting perspective. Someone who is not very adept in terms of usage of technology will soon find it very difficult for them to be placed there, right? So you need to be well-versed with recruiting technology. You need to be well-versed with in terms of how do you optimize the outcomes around it. The third piece which will also help them is that you need to start building credible relationship with the business.
Okay? Yeah.
More human interactions, more realistic and transparent information. A bad news kept inside the car under the carpet for 3 weeks will not convert into a good news. It needs to come out in public. Gain that credibility and credibility from the business only by being more human around it, state your fragility, state your inabilities, what you can do and what you cannot do, where you need help, and so on and so forth. Sit with them in the interview process. Understand how do they interview, what are their assessments. Transfer that knowledge into your assessments as well. So become more business savvy, more nuanced in terms of screening and selection. The last piece, which is, there is no one can escape the hard grind. You need to be invested there. A certain level of compensation, a certain level of designations will only come through the ranks. Yes, you can be smarter. You can short circuit the whole process by a couple of years, 3 years. But there is a logic and there is a wisdom and there is a structure which needs to be adhered to. You need to be, if you aspire to become one of those people in the leaders, you'll need to take time. You'll need to invest time in that. At the same time, Priyanka, there is always going to be demand for subject matter experts. It's absolutely okay to be a specialist recruiter throughout your life. That's how the best invest it happens. And you get really well paid. A recruiter only hiring principal engineers, maybe for a good product companies, or only hiring subject matter experts, gets equally and even more paid than their managers, right? So it's absolutely okay to be an SME. You need to figure out you want to become a leader where you'll have more administrative, more people-oriented tasks. And you might start missing the recruitment hustle on a day-to-day basis. Or you want to become an SME and absolutely be well invested there. The last and not the least piece is that look at the technology trends and be well abreast with technologies. If the newer technology is around data, around product, which is coming in, be well abreast with it. So be with the crest, be with the flow, be with the wave, understand where the market is moving, and you should also start moving around. That's what my view will be.
Yeah, amazing. You beautifully put it as well. And that brings us to the end of our conversation. I had a wonderful time speaking with you, Ritesh, and I love the insights and the tips you've shared with us today. So thanks again for joining Tech Recruiting Unfiltered podcast.
Priyanka, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thanks for listening to Tech Recruiting Unfiltered podcast. We hope you enjoyed as well as learned from it. To gain more such insights, join us for our next episode. You can follow us on LinkedIn at Technical Hiring Showcase page and our website technical-hiring.com to receive all the updates. That's all for this episode, folks. See you next time.